Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, January 22nd, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, everyone's preparing for the big storm. You know, it's winter. It's winter. Yesterday in D.C., they get a dusting of snow, and, you know, it brings the city to a, you know, I mean, it's just, people just get kind of crazy anymore. Good heavens, it's winter, it's snow, it's going to go away and warm up. Be prepared. That's what it's all about, folks. And while everybody else is scurrying around trying to, you know, get the last loaf of bread at the department store, I'll guarantee every listener and to the program that's in this storm is prepared and is watching everybody else go nuts while they're, you know, trying to do their last minute get-togethers. But gold today, gold sort of did that today. We've been waiting for it to firm up at about 1100. Excuse me. We have gold down 330 today at 1099. Silver was down 6 cents today at 1414. But what's nice about silver is we had a high of 1446. So, you know, it had a reverse of about 30 some cents. So it was very strong earlier in the day, as was gold. Platinum is up 13 at 834. Palladium was basically unchanged, down a buck at $500. The USDX today, 0.45 to the upside. 99.58. Crude oil had a big day, 2.49 to the upside at 32.02. And I'm sure the paper markets were able to keep their gains for the day. This is the last meeting they're having in Davos, Switzerland, and we all know what happens. They all keep markets high while they're over there. Dow was up 210 points today at 16,093. The NASDAQ was up 119 at 4591. The S&P was up 37 at 1906. 10-year yield back up over 2 at 2.05 on the yield. Euro, pressure on the euro, 108. And the world markets are getting a lift from the higher oil prices, which is really just such a joke. But yeah, Japan, though, up almost 6% overnight, up almost 1,000 points. Hong Kong was up about 3%, London over 2%, Germany not quite 2%, and let me see. Let me pull up my Shanghai. I don't know what the, I'm sure the lat had to be stronger with all the other world markets. Up 1.25%, up 36 points at 29.16. So, you know, they'll blame it on the higher oil prices, or they'll blame it on Mario Draghi's speech yesterday giving unlimited stimulus whenever they want it. So he didn't do anything yesterday. They kept the rates, didn't change their rate, but promise to be accommodative whenever they need it, and the sky is the limit, he pretty much said. So markets like that, you know, promise the market an unlimited amount of fiat money, and you'll have.
Yeah, they'll go for it.
They'll go for it.
How many free lunches can I get anyway? Could I get a year's supply of free lunches? But that's, you know, the point behind that is when they are prepared to, if the sky is the limit, and they are prepared, they claim they're prepared to provide unlimited support. That's actually an indirect evidence that they really think there's a lot of trouble here, at least potentially. They're not going to sit back and say, we're only going to give you 5% support. All right, I'm just pulling a number out of the air here. They're essentially saying, we'll give you 10%, 20%, 100%. We don't care. We'll do whatever to support this thing. It's evidence in its own way that they really don't think this is all that stable.
Well, sometimes just to promising something that they need, it was enough to you know, bring some of the world markets around along with higher oil prices and everything. So, you know, it's truly, I mean, does anybody really believe? And, you know, we got some discussions here about how nearly $8 trillion has been wiped off of the world's stock markets in January. Do you really think, you know, the oil turning around from 26 to 30 is, you know, we don't have to worry anymore, Al.
Yeah, I know everything.
The problems are all solved.
And
that's funny.
We owe it all to who? Obama, Paul Ryan, who's going to get credit for solving all of our problems.
So ridiculous.
No, we're not out of the woods yet, but whatever tendency there had been to panic up the end of last week, it's been moderated this week. We still have to watch and see what's going to happen next week. And, you know, what we see is a system that is unstable and prone to problems, you know, falling prices. But one of the points I wanted to make when Melody was talking about Draghi and the European Union promising to give the European stock market essentially all the support it needed, and European investors, what he's saying is, you bet in our casino and you can't lose money. We got all the slot machines fixed here where they pay out every time you put in a quarter, you get five quarters back. Now I'm speaking figuratively, of course, but it illustrates something we've talked about on the program in the past. People are not really investing in stocks. They are investing in the central bank's ability to support the stock market. And as long as the central banks say, oh yeah, we're going to keep the stock markets jacked up, keep them juiced, which is the term that was used by Richard Fisher, former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank. He retired, quit, whatever, March of last year. In a recent article, he said, look, we juiced the markets. He said the Federal Reserve juiced the markets. And as long as the Federal Reserve continues to juice the markets, this is me talking now, this is not what Richard Fisher said, but this is a clear implication, then people can invest. You can invest in the stock market because the central banks are guaranteeing that the stocks won't go down. In other words, you have to be very incompetent or very unfortunate to lose money in the stock market so long as the Federal Reserve is propping it up. But the problem is, we hear people talk about maybe quantitative easing 4 is going to be necessary in the near future. if the markets continue to have a bad time, then the Fed should stop in, and they should step in and apply a certain amount of financial stimulus to cause the markets to go up again. But can the Fed do that? European Central Bank says they can still do it, but can the Federal Reserve do it? Do they still have the resources to support the stock markets? And if they don't, the people that are betting and they're saying, well, the Federal Reserve can hold up the stock market, so it's safe to invest in it. Well, if it turns out that they can't do quantitative easing four because they are essentially broke, then people are going to have to start investing based on the value of the stocks, the real value based on fundamentals, rather than investing based on the Federal Reserve's determination to do the sky's the limit, we'll throw as much money at it as we have to maintain the illusion that these numbers are valid and viable. We are now at a point, at least in this country, where at least I suspect that the Federal Reserve can't. I don't think they can do a QE4. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. I'm not giving prophecy on this because I can't. But I think they exhausted their resources, their assets, pretty much exhausted them when they with quantitative easing three. I think they basically ran out of cash. And again, I've talked about it a number of times. The balance sheet is, according to some reports, 0.3% in the black for the Federal Reserve, which means there's 0.3% more assets than liabilities. That's a pretty thin, positive level for the Federal Reserve. There's not much margin there to play with. And what happens if they lend out their money and they don't have whatever liquidity they still have? What happens if they lend it out and it turns out that it's reported that, oh my gosh, the Fed's liabilities now exceed its assets? Instead of having 0.3% more assets than liabilities, what happens if they have 0.3% more liabilities than assets? Now, the number isn't huge. And the Fed can presumably, in conjunction with the federal government, they can print as much money as they want to from now until the last tree is chopped down and turned into paper. But the system runs on public confidence. And can the Fed maintain public confidence? Can the Federal Reserve maintain public confidence in our fiat monetary system if it's common knowledge that the Federal Reserve is operating in the red rather than in the black? Yeah, they can continue to write, they can continue to pump out more dollars, and they can continue to stimulate the economy and the markets by printing more paper dollars. But that's just the same as an ordinary person who continues to write checks when there's no money in their account. You may be able to bounce a few checks and put out some non-sufficient fund checks for a little while, but it isn't going to last for long. So in all of this, my main interest right now in this issue is I'm watching to see, will they do quantitative easing four? Because they shut QE3 down in October 2014. They've been dead. QE3 has, in theory, been dead for over a year. Now, a lot of people think that there has been quantitative easing that's been hidden and secret, and the Fed is still somehow pumping out money to hold the system together, but they're doing it in a way that the average person can't discern or understand. I'm not convinced that's true. Might be. I don't know what they're doing in secret, just because you can't see something happening doesn't mean that it is happening. And a lot of people say, oh, we know they must be doing quantitative easing, even though we can't see it. It's hidden from us. I don't know why they'd want to hide it. You know, you can sit back. I guess I can think of one good reason why they'd want to hide quantitative easing. They'd want to hide it because it is an implicit admission that the economy is weak. We got to put the economy on life support with quantitative easing. So we're not going to tell you we're on life support and maybe you'll get better. It'll inspire confidence. That's one reason to do this. But for the market's sake, the investors need to know that the Fed's going to step in and keep the market high. Just like Mario Draghi is telling the investors in Europe, he's saying, we're going to do anything. The sky's the limit. You can count on us to keep the markets high. So the investors say, yippee, the game is rigged. We can't lose. So, of course, they want to invest. All right. So what do you think, Molly?
Well, you know, they didn't tell us that they gave, was it Europe, excuse me, $16 trillion after 2008, 9 or 10. So, yeah, they do lots of things that they're not going to tell us. I think they rename things, and I think a lot of the money is going to be printed, and I think a lot of in the budget will go for infrastructure, and, you know, that'll create, you know, people have to go to work. So that would make a lot of inflation if the government is going to be using up all these, having to print all these dollars for that infrastructure repairs and so forth. But I don't, you know,
it's a mystery.
They're
going to
do, whatever they need to do. They're going to protect their own. They're going to protect their bank. Yeah, you're right. And I just,
the sky's the limit, but they don't mean that. We'll get to the limit long before we get to the top of the sky. All right.
True.
And the question is, have we already seen that limit with the Federal Reserve? And I don't have an answer, but I have a suspicion. And my suspicion is maybe the Federal Reserve has already encountered the limit to its spending. Maybe that's true. A lot of people would disagree. They may be right, and I may be mistaken. But right for the moment, I am wondering. I want to see if the Federal Reserve can do quantitative easing for. If they can't, we have to wonder, is this a choice? Or is this a necessity? Is it simply an implied admission that they're broke? And what then?
Speaking of broke, the 40th North American driller just filed for bankruptcy. This is according to Fuel Fix. And comments are it's only going to get worse. It's going to continue this year. Experts are saying there's a lot of parallels between today's crisis and the last oil crisis crash in 1986. Back in 1986, there was about 27% of exploration and production companies that went bust. In December, exploration production company defaults topped 11%, up from 0.5% the previous year, according to Fitch Ratings. That's a 2,000-plus jump. Wells Fargo says that if history repeats, people should prepare for the default rate to double in the next year or so. So even if we have a little bit of a rebound in oil, you're still going to see these default rates continue on for another year or so. And it goes on, it was Swift Energy, I guess the last day of 2015, an independent oil and gas company headquartered in Houston that actually became the fourth driller to file for bankruptcy. The company is trying to sort out over $1 billion in debt at a time when the firm's earnings have declined over 70% in the past year. Yeah. And again,
which is exactly how much the price of oil has declined in the last year or so, 70%. There's a corporation, their earnings declined 70%. This is no surprise.
In the 1980s, there's a bumper sticker that people in Texas had that said, God give me one more boom and I promise not to screw it up. The guy says people should have those bumper stickers ready to apply once again. But what's interesting about this report is that it talks about with the oil prices, the U.S. companies are the ones that are going to go out of business. OPEC countries, you know, they don't have a lot of the small players like the United States does. And it's usually the government that controls the oil drilling and production in a lot of these OPEC nations. But I also saw a report today on Venezuela, how their inflation is 700%. Venezuela, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be there. But so, again, this is a situation that's not going to get better. You're still going to have impacts, even with the price of oil moving up. The impacts of this low oil price will continue for another year or two. And one more thing before we go to break is companies are using bankruptcy to restructure. And what's that mean, Al? A code word for eliminating
debt.
Eliminating debt, not
paying
creditors.
Absolutely.
So it's a kinder gentler word. I hear music.
With more syllables. Sounds intelligent when you use more syllables, Melody.
Oh,
we're
going
to take a break. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We were talking about the possibility that the problem with oil is not going to go away. We're having an upward blip in the last couple of days. Oil has made for the people in the oil business, the last couple of days have to be just giving thanks to God. I mean, oh my God, their sense of panic should be considerable. A lot of people are talking about they could fall to $10. The price of crude oil could fall to $10 a barrel. At least some people are talking about that. But it's bounced back from 27 on up to 32. That's a great recovery for oil. However, here's another article from Ms. Shedlock's Global Economic Analysis, and the headline is "Shell Fires Another 10,000." Energy layoffs top 250,000. As reflective of trends in the industry, Shell Oil fired 10,000 workers. As fortunes collapse due to falling oil prices, Royal Dutch Shell will fire 10,000 people in an effort to bolster margins. Operating costs have reduced by $4 billion, or about 10%, in 2015, and the company expects sales costs to fall again in 2016 by another $3 billion. And what they're saying, look, you're not laying off 10,000 people because you think the market's going to improve. A lot of people can debate what's happening in the oil business, and I have opinions, you know, and Melody has opinions, and I'm sure you in the audience have opinions also. But Royal Dutch Shell ought to have a pretty good idea what they're talking about. They're laying off 2,000 people. It indicates that they don't expect a significant recovery, price recovery, for 2016. They could be wrong, but it's just evidence there's a problem here. Right, the problem we've had a good couple of days for crude oil, but that doesn't mean the problem is necessarily resolved, and there's good reason to believe it's not resolved. And then we can start wondering what are the consequences and how does this impact other industries and jobs, including yours or mine. No? What happens if the price of oil continues to stay as low as it has been recently? And what if this blip we've had where we've gone up most of $5 in the last few days, what if that turns around? How does this affect all of us? And I think the big answer probably is bonds. A lot of Melody was talking about it earlier in the program, where a lot of the bonds that have been issued by oil producing corporations, turns out they're not going to be able to pay them because the bonds were issued when they anticipated that the price of oil was going to be $100 a barrel. And they never imagined it could fall to 30. And as a result, the mathematics behind those bonds just can't withstand this market. And a lot of people, Melody was talking about, a number of corporations are going to file for bankruptcy. Now, nations per se, oil-producing nations, can't exactly file for bankruptcy on this. But they have their own problems because they've got to keep their people pacified. And they've been able to do that with oil revenues over the past, you know, several years or even decades. But this problem right now has put them in a bind where they may not be able to do that. And while corporations face bankruptcy and restructuring, where they're not going to go out of business, they're just going to stop paying their bills, or at least a large percentage of their bills, you talk about a nation that's an oil-producing nation, and people in the nation depend on revenue coming in from oil. These nations, if the governments don't deliver on the promise of relatively easy money from oil revenue, there's always the potential that you're going to see riots and maybe even political revolutions. Melody mentioned Venezuela, 700% inflation. You know, that's not, you can't look at that and say, well, everything's fine. No, it's probably not. There's good reason to believe that we might see a political revolution of some sort in Venezuela. Could happen. And there are other countries saying things. So the point is, this problem with oil is not over. It's going to be another year or two before it really balances out, if it does then. And the problem with bonds and debt and what may turn out to be hyperinflation if they try to print their way out of the problem. Anyway, we've had a couple of good days, but that's not going to be enough compensate for losing 70% of the price of oil over the past 12 or 18 months.
You know, we talked about Venezuela. We also have, well, there's a lot of markets that are suffering from the dramatic crash in oil prices. But Mexico is another one. Crude oil plays a large part in their economy. It accounts for about 11% of exports. And so that it is making traders sell their currency. You had the peso fall to its lowest level ever against the dollar on Thursday. One Mexican peso is now worth barely more than a nickel. And it's just not the peso. The ruble hit a record low this week. The South African rand last week. There's been a broad-based sell-off in the emerging markets. Investors are dumping these emerging market stocks and currencies as they flee to assets. And that one asset that it seems that they're fleeing to are U.S. government bonds. And so, you know, it's we'll see. You know, Mexico has really been hit the hardest of them all. And the problem for Mexico is that it's one of the easiest emerging market currencies to trade. So
why is that? Do you have any idea why that is?
Mexico's
non-political.
Yeah.
Mexico's just out there doing business. They're not out to push you. Don't, if you're trading with Mexico, it doesn't prove you're for somebody, you're against somebody. You're just buying some sombreros or whatever. All right. On the other hand, if you're trading with Turkey, there's political ramifications and implications. And are you trading with Saudi Arabia or Israel or wherever? There are political. There's not much politics involved in Mexico. They just did. Let's make a deal. And but, you don't upset people. They're not attracted to Mexico. It's non-political. They're not detracted. Just let's make a deal.
You know, this article that I was referencing, they talk about how the Federal Reserve, the final fear that's driving the peso down is the Federal Reserve, because the Fed's raised interest rates for the first time in December. It also raises concerns that these emerging market companies that borrowed in dollars would have a harder time repaying their debts. So,
well, you know, the other point is we talk about the Russian ruble, for example, being at its lowest level in however long relative to the dollar. Well, is that good news or bad news? I mean, the rest of the world, all of the world right now is trying to cause inflation except for the United States. We're the only currency that seems to be willing to endure deflation, and in part because we sit on that teeter-totter. We're on one end, and the currencies of the rest of the world are on the other end. And if we endure deflation, then they can enjoy inflation, which supposedly makes their products less expensive, and they can sell more on the international market. Most of these countries want inflation. Our government and the Federal Reserve have wanted inflation for most of my lifetime, which is why the dollar is worth maybe a nickel compared to what it was in 1971 in terms of purchasing power. That's evidence of persistent policy. They want inflation. Except for here we have now, last 12, 18 months, we see that the government is allowing deflation to take place. And I wonder if we're not sacrificing ourselves, or the government isn't sacrificing itself in order to help the rest of the world. If we have deflation, they're on the other end of the teeter-totter. They get inflation, which theoretically will stimulate their economy.
Yeah, but the problem is these are extremes. I mean, these areas of currencies are going to the extremes where they're really, are they really helping? Who are they helping? Sure, they're still helping, you know, a little bit Europe, a little bit, and so forth. But countries that have been hit by the oil industry, like Venezuela and Mexico, you know, having these currencies, they're not helping them at all. And well, our high currency is gutting our country.
Oh, no, I know. That's the problem. We're being sacrificed.
We're being,
on,
yeah,
the
yeah,
government
absolutely.
In particular.
But to me, I differ a little bit. I believe it's done by design. It's exactly what they want.
I don't know if it's what they
exactly
want,
what
sure,
they
but
want.
I'm inclined to agree that they're certainly allowing this. I would think that they can make inflation happen if they really want it to happen. I'm inclined to believe that's entirely possible. I could be mistaken, but I think they could make inflation happen. I have a very hard time understanding why our government is allowing the U.S. dollar to get stronger, become more valuable relative to foreign currencies, knowing that it's going to impair our exports and may ultimately even leak into this country and cause deflation here, which is a hallmark of economic depression. Why are we sacrificing, you know, American jobs and whatever to make a stronger dollar? It's a very intriguing question. Why are we allowing deflation? Everybody in the world right now wants inflation. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but that's what they want. except for the United States government. We are allowing the rest of the world to inflate while we deflate. Is that a good thing with a fiat currency? It's certainly a mysterious thing. It's a confusing thing.
I don't think it's confusing. I think they do want to gut the rest of this country. And I do think it's all planned and it's all done by design. And, you know, yes, I'm not going to be able to find that in the fine print and, you know, from some, you know, legal document from the White House. But I do believe it's all being done by design.
I agree that's probably the case.
And, you know, when the time comes, they will reverse it. I know it's temporary. And, I mean, you certainly don't see people reacting like there's any type of, you know, inflation going on. And when you have a 40%, so, you know, it is when you have these markets that are so rigged and you have these huge trades in the Forex, you know, it can distort any types of numbers. And, you know, that makes it difficult to, you know, see through all the clouds and everything. But no, it's deliberate. They're gutting, and they'll reverse it when they're ready. And they'll reverse it with quantitative easing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If they can. There's the question in my mind, at least. Can they engage another round of
quantitative easing? They will do it until it absolutely collapses. Ow.
I'm not sure that's true. And when you say it absolutely collapses, are you talking about when you say it, do you mean the Federal Reserve absolutely collapses, or do you mean the markets absolutely collapse?
When the markets and our monetary policy collapses.
See,
when we do default, when we begin defaulting.
You have to wonder, what are they most interested in protecting? Are they most interested in preventing the markets from collapsing? Or are they most interested in preventing the Federal Reserve from collapsing? Which one are they trying to protect? Because it may be that they can't protect both. It may be that there are certain conflicts of interest and whatever, and if they're going to do what's best for the markets, they're going to do what's worst for the Federal Reserve. If they're going to do what's best for the Federal Reserve, they're going to do if they're going to do what's best for the Federal Reserve, maybe they're going to do what's worst for the markets. It is strange. I don't have an answer on it, per se. I don't know that anyone does, other than maybe Janet Yellen, and she's not telling. Yellen's not telling, Melody. But it's something that
changes
you keep
are coming.
Your eyes on.
I mean, changes are coming, whether it be in the Federal Reserve. The markets, look, the markets are going to drop. That's a given. I mean, you know, there's so much debt in these markets that it's unbelievable. You know, how much their debt has increased over the last couple of years. You know, how these multinational corporations have I saw some numbers on those. I wanted to give them to you, Alan. You know, I forgot. But, you know, I mean, the purging of the systems is coming. The markets will be destroyed. And that's the whole point. There's trillions of dollars sitting there in pension and retirement accounts. You know, we know legislation's been written. We know this has all been talked about. They're ready to take it. We know there's going to be bail-ins. So when these things begin to unfold and unwind, yeah, it's going to be too late for anybody to protect what they already have. You know, some will be able to do it, but the mass amount of people are going to lose a very large part of their money, of their hard-earned savings, if they have anything left.
Doesn't have any savings worth mentioning.
Well, there's still people out there, Al, that have money. When you got trillions of dollars.
Some people do, but half the people can't raise $500.
And those people will be affected because they won't be able to supply food for their families. But they're not, and you're right, they're not going to lose a lot of, you know, their hard-earned money, their retirement accounts, and so forth. But you still got trillions of dollars sitting there that people are attached to, and they will lose that. A large part of it they will lose. And the government will come, we're here to help. We have this brand-new annuity for you. And you'll never have to worry about investing in the stock markets again. This is going to be the new.
You give us all your money now, and we're going to give you some money later.
Yeah,
see?
You betcha. This is the
such
new
a
retirement.
Deal. We'll be safe.
And we have Obamacare.
People would steal your money other than ourselves. Of course. We get to steal your money. The rest of them can't.
And we have Obamacare for you for your
Don't
health.
Forget that. Thank goodness for Obamacare. I feel better every time I think about it. I just The world is going to be a safer place for all of us thanks to Obamacare and higher taxes. We'll talk more about this in a moment. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in about 2.5 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and we are debating some of the imponderables about the current economic situation. And part of the reason this stuff is imponderable, it's difficult to really grasp on one level, you know, intellectually, kind of comprehend, say, okay, I get what's going on here. It's hard to understand because much of it is irrational. And the reason it's irrational, in my opinion, and Melody's, I believe, is because we understand it's based ultimately on a fiat currency. We're living in a world where they treat debt as an asset. They treat debt as wealth. It's crazy.
It's just digits. There's nothing there.
Oh, it's worse than digits.
It's
negative digits. It's negative digits.
And it's not real.
That's, I know.
It truly is an illusion. It truly is.
It's nothing but a promise to pay. That's what a debt is. It's a promise to pay. Okay, I promise to pay $1 billion. As soon as I can get somebody to take the promise, I'm a wealthy man. My wealth is directly proportional in this world right now. Your wealth, my wealth, in most people's, with exception of those who are investing in tangible objects like gold, silver, land, whatever. Most of our wealth is based on nothing but promises to pay. A promise. It's not a payment. Everything you've got that's denominated in paper is nothing but a promise to pay. It's an IOU, and people are treating this in the same sense they treated the subprime mortgages.
Ow. I think people have a hard time grasping it. And I heard a discussion one day, believe it or not, in the grocery store. There was a checkout, kids. They were college students from Penn State. And there was one against three. And they were talking about, well, as long as my dollar spends, I really don't care.
Yep.
As long as it's spent, that's all I need.
Yep.
And then there was one argument where the guy says, well, no, it's just a piece of paper. And I think that in if people have a hey, as long as my statements show this, as long as I get my dollar that I can go to the store and buy something, everything is okay. That's the way the world works. As long as I can spend my money, as long as I can take my $10 bill and go to the store, I'm okay. And well, it's hard for people to grasp.
See, you're talking about college kids.
Well,
and one
I
thing
just
about
brought them in to talk about how people can grasp that.
I understand, but the point I want to make is that the college kids, all they care about is whether the money spends.
Well, anybody cares. That's all anybody cares about.
No, that's
now.
Not true. That's not true. As you get older, you actually generate some savings. College kids don't have any savings. They don't care particularly what happens to the dollar in terms of whether it's inflated, deflated. I know, but it's part of the reason, in my opinion, that the college kids don't care about these inflation, deflation, whatever, so long as their dollar spends. As long as they got a job, they have a constant stream of dollars coming in. Maybe they've got something, some subsidy from the government. I get $500 a month. They get $1,000 a month. As long as it spends, I'm a happy camper. Wait until you have $100,000 in the bank, all right? Or you have $100,000 invested in your home, and you find out, holy cow, they've taken my dollars, and what used to be worth a dollar is now only worth 50 cents. I guarantee you they're going to sing a different song at that point in time. They get further into life. They actually have some equity one way or another. At that point in time, they're going to change from worrying only about whether it spends to worrying about whether it saves. All right? And as you grow more mature and perhaps more intelligent, more understanding, you start worrying about, it's not enough, does it save? Can I save my wealth in this medium? And my wealth is the excess beyond, I consumed $100,000 a year, but I earned $120,000 a year. I got a net $20,000 gain a year. That's my wealth. All right, it's reflected. How do I save my wealth? It's a reflection of my effort, my work, and whatever. How do I save? Well, I can save it in paper dollars. But what happens if the paper dollars they lose half their value? Was that a wise choice for a medium for saving your wealth? The dollars themselves are not your wealth. They are a medium for moving that wealth around, but they're not really. They're not your wealth. How many dollars do you have? That's not the issue. How many hours of your life have you effectively saved in your bank account? And how many hours will be there when you go to the bank and say, I'd like to close my account and take my $100,000 off? How many will still be there? It's confusing, and it's the sort of thing that it's hard to talk about without rolling your eyes. But the reason, in my opinion, is the fundamental premise that we can use these debt-based monetary instruments, these Federal Reserve notes, fiat dollars that have no intrinsic value, we can treat this as forms of wealth. This, to my mind, is crazy and irrational. But once you accept that premise, that we can use these debt-based dollars, and it'll all work out fine, you accept that premise? The logic of that premise will take you into places where you are forced to roll your eyes to say, this is crazy, right? This is incomprehensible. And yet they keep holding it together by issuing more of these paper dollars, these IOUs. And wonder how long can it hold together before everybody just says, wait a second, this is crazy.
Even with the price of oil going down, this is what, to me, makes a prime example. Been talking about a cost of living basket since 2008. It is up over 40%. If you look at gold from 2008, it's up 54%. You keep your money in the bank, and what do you get? 0.001% over this period of time. You know, people talk about, well, your gold doesn't give you any dividends. It doesn't give you any interest. Well, I'm sorry, it just gave you 14% over the cost of living since 2008. So how is that bad for you?
Yeah.
So, and this is how something that people just don't understand. Yes, you have those dollars in the bank. They're just digits. They're nothing, and you get nothing for them. And even though gold had, you know, peaked at 1900, you look at 2008 to 2016, you'd be up 14% over the cost of living. So, which would you rather
part
have?
Of the argument is that gold doesn't generate any interest. True enough, doesn't generate any interest. But your dollars don't generate any savings. What are you more concerned with? The value of your principal or the value of your interest? These are two different things. And to say, okay, gold has a defect, doesn't generate any interest. But dollars, at least for most of my lifetime, they also have a defect, which is a dollar today is only worth a nickel compared to what it was back in 1971. Now, which is more important? That I get 3% a year on my gold, or that I am able to preserve my wealth against the inflation government's caused for most of my lifetime? In the last 18 months, we see evidence of deflation, but
not in our everyday goods.
I understand. We see it in relative to foreign currencies. Relative to foreign, in the foreign markets, we see evidence of deflation. Domestically, we still see inflation to some degree. There are some things that you look at this and you say, what are we doing getting tangled up in the foreign markets in the first place? Do we really want to be in the New World Order? Do we really need and want multinational corporations? It's taken for granted that we must compete. We must sell products into China, for example. Why couldn't I sell products into South Dakota? Why do we have to go to foreign markets? Why is that a necessity? This is the best market in the whole world, the United States of America. Why can't we just sell into our own market? Why can't we restore our tariff barriers and I'll worry about selling to South Dakota rather than selling to Beijing? What difference does it make? It's better for the country. Might not be as good for China, but it's great for us. Make our own, buy our own, sell our own. Put up high tariff barriers, right? When we start engaging in all of this foreign trade, that's another one of these, premises, the need to engage in foreign trade. It is a premise it's an invitation to irrational behavior. All of a sudden, we have to protect our interest, our national interest in China, or our national interest in Syria, or our national interest in Afghanistan or in Iraq. Why do we have all these national interests in these foreign countries that drag us into wars and complications and the rest of that? Maybe we would be better off to just mind our own business by keeping our own business within our own country. And if we could contain our economic problems. I don't know that this is possible. This is a question of emphasis more than absolutely doing one thing or absolutely doing another. It's a question of balance, question of emphasis. But if we could keep most of our economic activity or more of our economic activity within the borders of our 50 states, let the rest of the world go its own way. And if they want to do global free trade, fine, let them do it. But it's killing us. When we're going to do global free trade, we lose our jobs. We are forcing American workers to compete head-on with Chinese workers. There's only one way that can work out. American workers' incomes have to be diminished in order to come closer to those of China's or any other third world nation. We've sacrificed American workers, we've sacrificed the middle class in order to engage in global free trade. And as far as I can see, the only people who win from global free trade are the multinational corporations. And maybe the third world nations, but they're not my problem. Why not protect the United States of America and say, look, we're going to trade. I'm going to trade with Dakota, South Dakota, or Maine, or Florida, rather than Beijing or Mexico City or wherever in the third world. And if we can do that, maybe the world becomes something we can comprehend and we aren't as bewildered. We're not lied to as much. Harder, you know, the number, it might be easier to comprehend if we just mind our own business, deal with things within the United States of America, and those things that are foreign to us, just, you know, walk away from it. Why bother? Now, I know a lot of people disagree with that, and the argument is based on, you know, values and ideas other than simple economics. But still, there's something going on in this world that is so confusing and contrary to common sense that you can't look at it without starting to wince or roll your eyes. And you get into it far enough where it's sufficiently confusing, and what options do you have other than get what you can right now for yourself? If you reach a point where you can't understand what's going on in the system, what is your ultimate choice? And it seems to me to get mine. I'm going to get mine. I don't care what happens to the rest of them. I don't understand it. I'm going to get mine. Just get me belly up to the trough and grab all you can. Is that conducive to a good society? Is it conducive to a stable society, a moral society? Is it conducive to living in a place where everybody wants to live? Or is it conducive to a kind of chaos that ultimately diminishes the vast majority of the people? It's a shame that these are the kinds of questions that we wind up facing. I'm not sure that, you know, we look at them. How many angels, how many economists can dance on the head of a pin? To some degree, that's what I'm talking about. It's a stupid question. And yet we are there where we are forced to deal with stupid questions because we have a stupid monetary system. Constitution requires in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, it says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debt, and yet we haven't had gold and silver coin in general circulation in this country for, or anything backing it up since at least 1968. Right? We haven't had it. Close to 50 years. And we wonder, gee, I wonder why we have the problems we're having right now. You don't suppose it could be that the founding fathers knew what they were talking about, and there was a reason to use gold and silver rather than fiat currency? Well, we're going to have to deal with these problems and questions. We'll answer all those questions, Melody, on Monday.
All right.
Right now we're out of time, and so we're going to have to leave these questions to simmer and stew and whatever ferment over the weekend. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.